Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Oh, yes, well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Healthy Mind. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and it is May 23rd, 2012. I hope that you're doing well. Can you believe that we are inching in to summer? I really hope you're doing well. Hope you've had a good week. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. I have a great show planned for you this week. Some really, really solid news, health news that you're going to want to stick around for the second half of the program. A busy week of news. Parents, especially if you're parents, you're going to want to hear this. Some really, really great news for those of us who still have the kids around and our happiness. So I'll tease you with that. But a great show today where we're going to talk a little bit about motivation and some of the things that might get in our way, if you will, of getting the things done that we want to. And hopefully I can offer some tips on how you can bust through that barrier and get some of these things done. So we're going to be talking about motivation today. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Please don't hesitate to email me. Thank you so much for those emails. I really do appreciate them. The email, as always, peter@thehealthymind.com. Okay, now, today I want to talk about motivation and some of the things that get in our way, the literal mental blocks that we have, and maybe some of the ways that we can get past them. Now, what am I talking about here? And I really want you to think about this, and I'll say it first and then I'll explain it. The power of 15 minutes. The power of 15 minutes. Okay, now hold on to that. But we've all been there. I don't care who it is. We've been there. There's a project that's due, maybe for work, a big report. There might be a huge, huge paper that someone has to write for school or taxes or bills, whatever it may be. And we get this block about not being able to get started. And then what happens? We put it off. We put it off. We put it off. Time passes. The deadline's getting close. It raises the anxiety and it makes it that much harder to get it done. Sound familiar? I think you know what I'm talking about. Now, I see this a lot also in clinical practice. Some of the anxieties and worries that people have about things they can't or can do gets wrapped up in this ball of worry, what's known as an anticipatory anxiety. Now, this isn't just about anxiety disorders. All of us have this, and I'm going to give you a little bit of an example of what I'm talking about. Now, think about anything. You might have something that's due right now as you're listening to this. Maybe you're listening to this program so you can avoid getting something done. But nonetheless, I want you to think about something that you've been putting off, okay? Whatever it may be, I want you to think about that thing that you've been putting off and not getting done. Now, the question is, why? Why aren't you getting it done? What is it? And this is where it's really, really helpful to think about it in this way. It's important to break down literally the thoughts that we are having that get in our way and don't allow us to move forward in our lives. Oftentimes, when we break down some of the reasons or the thoughts holding us back, we see that either they don't make a whole lot of sense or they're not really that big a deal. What do I mean? Well, I'll give you some of my examples. When I see a person for the first time, you have to do a fairly large write-up, right? It's the first time you see them, you're doing an initial evaluation, but that takes quite a bit of time. So sometimes I'll put them off before I actually do the full write-up. Don't get me wrong, I've written notes, everything's in place, but a nice formal write-up so it looks nice in the chart, that takes some time. And as I let it sit there, it seems like this huge monster of a project that I have to get done. And I still do it to this day, 16 years in practice, and I still go through this mental exercise. When I finally sit down in front of that chart and say, it is getting done, it never fails. It's not this huge monster. I get out a pen, and I get out a sheet of paper, and usually 10, 15 minutes go by, and it's done. But I will resist and hold on and hold on and hold on as if it's going to take me a year to do this project, or this chart in this case. Now, I'm sure you've all been through it in your own way, whatever it may be. It might be the bills. It might be exercise. It might be a paper. It might be your taxes. Nonetheless, a lot of the reasons that we don't get things done is that we allow our anxieties and our worries and our thoughts about how long it's going to take, how much effort is going to be needed. All of these things machinate around in our minds. And that's a real term, machinate. But it goes on in our mind and it prevents us from getting things done until, for whatever reason, we decide it's either been too long, we're upset with ourselves, a lot of stuff is piling up, but we go and do it. We do it. You do it. You get it done. The important part is, how can you capture that early so that you don't let things pile up and you can be more productive? And believe me, when you start attacking those things, especially the big things that you have to get done in your life that sit there and pull you down and tire you, fatigue you, that you're not getting them done, and may prey upon your self-esteem. When you start getting those things done, look out. Your productivity increases, your confidence increases, and you're motivated to do even more and more. But why? Why don't we do this? And a lot of it has nothing to do with our ability. It has to do with our thoughts. So, how do we fix this? Is it possible to fix it? And I have to tell you, from everything that I've read, no matter what it is, I've not been able to find anything better than the 15-minute rule. The 15-minute rule. I tell people this all the time. So what is the 15-minute rule? Set an alarm or a clock or on your phone for 15 minutes, then go and do the hardest thing or the thing that you feel is going to be the hardest to do. The task that you feel is the most intense, or you feel you just can't get it done or don't want to start it. And no matter what, no matter what, do it for 15 minutes. I don't care if you're kicking and screaming or yelling the entire time. Work on it. 15 minutes and see what happens. We're all the same. We're all the same. What ends up happening is, once we get into it, if we dedicate ourselves to getting it done, 15 minutes flies. And usually 15 minutes turns into a half hour or an hour or two. But it's that first minute or two or 10 that we have to get through before we realize what we have feared, what we've worried about, what we thought would happen. Something negative doesn't happen. In fact, we get things done. It's the anticipatory anxiety about how long, how difficult, how challenging any task is going to be that holds us back. And we see it clinically in anxiety disorders and different phobias. People are afraid to drive on the freeway or go into large stores or be in crowds. But oftentimes when you talk to them, what they fear happening rarely ever does. But it's needing to challenge those thoughts, those automatic assumptions that we make. Once we do that and take action, we don't have this nebulous worry about what might happen because we don't know. It's uncertain. How long will it take me? What's going to happen? How difficult will this be? That's replaced by what actually happens. And that's usually things we get done, tasks we accomplish, big projects that we finish, taxes that we pay, or bills. It gets replaced by our literal action. And then we have a memory of that. So the next time we are faced with a similar task, we just can't say, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going to happen. Because you've pushed through. And even though you may say, gosh, I don't feel like it, it's going to take forever, you know that, gosh, I did it before. I set that alarm. I did about 15 minutes and I knew the first 1, 2, 5, 10 minutes were a little rough, but then I got into it. And it makes it easier from then on. Thoughts hold us back. Thoughts and feelings. You need to be aware of that because those are changeable. We can challenge them. And we can make changes in our life. You can do it. You really can. The 15-minute rule. Try it. Try it today. On something that you have just been putting off and you're sitting there and you're thinking about it. It's like, ugh, God, if I have to think about that anymore, I don't know what I'm going to do. Set 15 minutes and no matter what, sit there and do it. You will be stunned at how much gets done. A simple thing. You don't need a whole lot of books, a bunch of self-help manuals to tell you how you need to organize your life. 15 minutes. 15 minutes. Do it no matter what. And watch your productivity and your accomplishments increase. And let me tell you, that, oh dear, is a wonderful step to take as we walk down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, well, a busy week in health news and a couple of really interesting stories that I want to feature today. The first one, the headline, distraction plays a critical role in pain relief. Now, those of you who have been listening to The Healthy Mind know, of course, that I do psychiatry, but my specific area of interest within psychiatry is the role that our thoughts, that our emotions, that our feelings have in literally affecting our physical pain and other forms of discomfort, this mind-body connection as it relates to pain. This was a very, very interesting study. What the researchers did was look at the effect, if any, of distraction as it relates to pain. But where it's different from previous studies was they were able to look at MRI scans of what was happening to the brain when the participants were actually being distracted, mentally distracted. And what they found, fascinating, they found that by distraction, literally pain signals are physically being blocked at the earliest point that they're originating. At the earliest point. Now, what does this mean? Well, you've got a back pain, right? It's got to travel from your back onto your spine, back up into your brain, and you start feeling, ouch, it hurts. What they found was that with mental distraction, The dampening effects of those pain signals began even before the pain signal got to the brain, at the earliest point from the site of pain. It is amazing. Now, this was a study that was published in the journal Current Biology, and what they used were these high-resolution spinal fMRIs, functional magnetic resonance imaging. And what the functional MRI does is it looks at activity, at function. So it'll show you literally where activity is going on in your body. And this is how they took a look at it. They took the subjects, they put them through exercises where they were mentally distracted, and what they found was the pain signals decreased. They got releases of our body's own natural kind of opioids, the endorphins and the enkephalins. And these were released, causing a decrease in painful signals. When these study participants were more distracted by the harder of the two memory tasks, they did perceive less pain. And you actually saw lower activity in the spinal cord, according to the fMRI. So these findings really show how deep our emotions, our feelings, our mental processes can go in altering our experience of pain. Now, according to the researchers, they state, quote, "Our findings strengthen the role of cognitive behavioral therapeutic approaches in the treatment of pain diseases, as it could be extrapolated that these approaches might also have the potential to alter underlying neurobiological mechanisms as early as in the spinal cord," end of quotes. In English, though, that means that doing cognitive behavioral work on understanding the way that our mind works as it relates to pain could literally affect the way nerves transmit pain. Fascinating. We've known it all along, but we're starting to literally be able to see what these mind-body connections are like. This is why I say, particularly to those of you who are suffering from physical pain, never, ever doubt how truly powerful you are and the ability that you have to affect change and positive health in your life. Fascinating, fascinating study. Okay, the next study, I loved this, and I promised you earlier in the program that I was going to talk about it. My fellow parents, and especially those of us who have waited a bit to have children, it turns out that, well, getting up to change those diapers at, 3:30 or 4 a.m., it ends up, it may be the very best path to happiness and fulfillment. All right, what am I talking about? The headline, "Parents today are happier than non-parents." A new research study, and this was done at three North American universities as well as the University of British Columbia. They did this study, and what they found was that parents experience greater levels of happiness and meaning from life than non-parents. Now, this was very interesting because this particular study contrasted with some other popular studies and kind of the pervasive thought in culture that parents just have it so, so rough because of the increased demands of having children. But the research showed that parents actually felt better, more meaning, more fulfillment, and more happiness. Now, the interesting thing was, the increased amount of happiness, the benefits of parenthood, seemed to be more consistent in men and also in older and married parents. So men, older parents, and those parents that are married. Now, the research itself, the study, will be published in the journal Psychological Science. And it's interesting because these findings are among a new wave of research that shows that maybe parenthood comes with more positives and negatives, despite all the work that we have to do. And what's interesting here, I'm always fascinated by the evolutionary psychology perspective, but it dovetails with some of this emerging evolutionary thought that may suggest parenting may in fact be a fundamental human need. Now, according to University of British Columbia psychology professor Elizabeth Dunn, oh God, I love this, she co-authored the study with folks at the University of California, at Riverside, and Stanford. She states, quote, "This series of studies suggests that parents are not nearly the miserable creatures," her words, "the miserable creatures we might expect from recent studies and popular representations." Now, it really shows that age and marital status is important in our overall parental happiness. The thinking is that if someone is older, well, perhaps they're more mature and able to handle this. And if you're married, you have more social and financial supports and you're just able to share the work, then you're more likely to be happy. Now, one of the other professors said, quote, "This is not true, however, for single parents or very young parents." So there is a distinction here between the two. Again, older, married, and men seem to do better. Fathers more so than mothers. And the researchers thought the reason for this might be because of the added responsibility that mothers have, both in the expectations of motherhood and also trying to balance work. But there's a lot more to be researched about parenthood. Now, let me just say one thing here. It doesn't mean that single parents aren't happy, and I hope that that's not what you took from that. Even the researchers wanted to make sure that they made that clear. They just said that it seems, according to their research, that the happiest of the parents were those that were older and that were married and tended to be the fathers. So, take heart, my dear fellow parents, getting up in the evening to change that diaper or clean up that bed sheet that's full of vomit. It's all going to work out because it really is worth it all. And speaking for myself, I couldn't agree more with this study. Okay, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the rest of the news in a segment I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. With fat, what's good or bad for the heart may be the same for the brain. According to new research from Brigham and Women's Hospital, one bad fat, saturated fat, was found to be associated with worse overall cognitive function and memory in women over time. By contrast, a good fat, monounsaturated fat, was associated with better overall cognitive function and memory. The next headline. Weight struggles? Blame new neurons in your hypothalamus. New nerve cells formed in a select part of the brain, the hypothalamus, could hold considerable sway over how much you eat and consequently weigh, according to new research by Johns Hopkins scientist. And finally, the headline, "The heart rules the head when we make financial decisions." Our gut feelings influence our decisions, overriding rational thought when we are faced with financial offers that we deem to be unfair, according to the latest research study. Even when we are set to benefit, our physical response can make us more likely to reject a financial proposition we consider to be unjust. The heart rules the head. Oh, it's what the healthy mind is all about. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again, you and I. We have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. You can also follow me on Twitter if you'd like. That's at Dr. Zafiridis. We're also out there on iTunes. If you want to take The Healthy Mind with you wherever you go, you can do that. And finally, please don't hesitate to contact me if there's any questions, comments, anything you want to talk about. Email me. The email address is peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zaffiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind.